I'm Apollo 16 astronaut Charlie Duke, the 10th man to walk on the moon.
Please join us from 7 to 8 p.m. on Wednesdays.
The Space Show, Australia, on 88.3 Southern FM.
What a ride, what a ride.
And what a ride it was 50 years ago when three people were heading towards the moon. Two of them expected to walk on the moon but didn't. Well, this is the Space Show. Welcome. My name is Andrew Rennie. On the show this evening, we're going to hear from Joe Kerwin. Joe who, you might say? Well, Joe Kerwin should be well known to you because he flew on the first Skylab mission, the first manned mission, in 1973. Spent 28 days in space. And before that, he had served as capsule communicator, particularly during the Apollo 13 mission, as we shall hear this evening. Well, let's get into our Apollo 13 section with this. Now, if you've been listening to our show for the last several weeks, you will be familiar now, by now, with Apollo 13. Yes, two-thirds of the way to the moon, an oxygen tank in the service module exploded, crippling the spacecraft. The crew had to use the lunar module in order to survive. Fortunately, this accident happened before the landing on the moon. Well, they went round the moon and headed back towards Earth. The question is, would they make it back in time? Well, as they approached the Earth, Joe Kerwin was on console and the astronauts were about to jettison that damaged service module. Here is how that went.
Roger, understand SM Jet 13812. It's not that time critical, Jim.
Can we do it at any time, Joe?
I think so, but let me check. Yes, Houston, that's affirmative. You can jettison the service module when you're ready. No big rush, but anytime.
Okay, sounds good.
Apollo Control, Houston, 138 hours, so 1 minute into the flight. As you heard earlier, Joe Kerwin told Apollo 13 that they could separate at their convenience. That followed them.
And in one whole side of that big difference.
Is that right?
Right by the high gate antenna, the whole panel is blown out, almost from the base to the engine.
Copy that.
That was Joe Kerwin there. We're talking with the crew of Apollo 13 as they approached the Earth. Now, Joe Kerwin's role on this mission was as CAPCOM. CAPCOM, you say, what's that? Well, CAPCOM is short for Capsule Communicator. Now, right from the early days of the Mercury manned space program, right up until today, American astronauts are used to speak to other astronauts in space. It's not, it was very rare in the initial days, but it became more common during the space station era. It was very uncommon for anyone else other than another astronaut to talk to the astronauts in space. It was figured that, well, if you had to tell someone to do something, one of your mates would be the best chance for doing it. So Joe Kerwin was the capsule one of several capsule communicators during the Apollo 13 mission. The Space Association had a meet-up with Joe Kerwin and he gave us a very interesting chat about his experiences on the Apollo 13 mission. So here we go with our chat with Joe Kerwin, capsule communicator on Apollo 13.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. Of course, a ton of memories come up. One of the memories was just sitting at the Capcom console for hours during the return flight, listening to static, leaning over with my head in my hands, listening to the static of the low power S-band, waiting to hear the crew call. And when we heard the crew, we responded, and they would go to high gain for a while to communicate, and then go back to S-band. They were so short of power that they had to turn everything off, as you know. And how in the world they controlled attitude during their burns during that time still amazes me. I think it had to do with Jim Lovell having been on the crew of Apollo 8, and on Apollo 8, they never needed a backup way of controlling spacecraft attitude without their IMU, without their guidance system. But they thought through it and thought through an idea that if they could swing the spacecraft so that the edge of the Earth was in a certain position in the window, the attitude would be satisfactory for a burn. Fantastic stuff. Of course, I remember particularly the reentry sequence, and my principal memory of that is, let's see where we go with it. They had separated the service module from the command module, and Jack Swigert's duty in the relatively few minutes left before entry interface, was charged with using the telescope and sextant in the command module to get accurate attitude. And he couldn't find two stars. And the reason he couldn't, the limb was still attached, and sunlight was reflecting into the optics from the limb, and the stars were extraordinarily difficult to find. And I'm sitting there at the Capcom console just listening, and Gene Kranz is standing up there behind me, and the clock is ticking away and ticking away. And I'm looking up at Gene saying, "Let's get on with it, Gene. We gotta go. And he just glanced down. Of course, I didn't say that. He just glanced down at me and gave me this little wave of the hand saying, give him another minute. And pretty soon Swigert said, "Five balls," which meant that his star angle difference was 0.0000. He had made it. We had the alignment and on through to entry. And then the things went pretty well from there, amazingly. By the way, I was sitting next to Ken Mattingly for reentry. Ken, of course, was the assigned command module pilot for Apollo 13, and the discovery had been made just several days before launch that one of the backup crewmen had a family episode of German measles and was found to be susceptible to German measles. They tested everybody on both the prime and the backup crew, and found that Ken Mattingly, who did not have the measles, was susceptible. He had not contracted it during childhood and didn't have immunity. So the crew was called into Chris Kraft's office. Chris was the director of the center at that time. And for some reason, they asked me to come along, and I came along and sat there. And Dr. Barry talked through what they had done to assess immunity, and why he thought that Ken should come off the crew and be replaced by Jack Swigert. And I'm thinking through all this and looking at the faces of the prime crew, especially Lovell, and thinking how long they had trained together for what was really a pretty difficult mission. And I I spoke up. I said, I don't agree, Dr. Kraft, with Dr. Berry's assessment that the German measles is a serious illness and that Ken should be removed from the crew. And Kraft turned and looked at me as though from 1,000 miles away and said, that wasn't Dr. Berry's decision. That was my decision. And I shrunk to a height of 6 inches and felt like scurrying out the door. That was a tough time. He made a tough decision. And of course, Jack did a great job. It was dramatic. And by the way, Ken never got the measles. Ken was essential. He was one of the truly essential people in the mission control and at the center during this time, because as soon as they got the free return burn done and realized that one of the major problems was going to be having less than 3 hours of electricity left in the reentry batteries on the command module, and therefore had to get the command module going from a frozen lump to a fully operational spacecraft in less than 3 hours to make that reentry possible, Ken Mattingly went over to the simulator and spent just about all of the time between then and reentry going through and building that that square zero checklist that started with a dead machine. The temperature that I remember hearing was 38 degrees. It was really cold in there. There was moisture everywhere. The team with Ken as the commander in the simulator built it up, tested it. And all this time was growing short. Jim Lovell was getting testy. And he was saying more than once, I've got to have that checklist, you people. I've got to look it over. Swigert has to look it over. We have to check the switches. Get it up there. And we'd look at flight, and he'd shrug his shoulders and say, and we'd say, it's coming soon, Jim. They're working it hard. And pretty soon the door over on the left burst open, and here came some guys with several copies of the newly printed checklist. And it was read up to the crew. We were all sort of absolutely amazed that every system on that spacecraft worked beautifully as it was powered up. And that brought another memory back to the tragic Apollo fire of January 67, I think it was, when we'd had the fire in the command module during pre-launch checks down at the Cape and killed the crew. And one of the very many things that was done after that was to go through all the wiring in the command module and put in an extra layer of potting to make it absolutely waterproof, as well as step-proof from walking on it. And it had to be that activity that made the command module able to get powered up like that. So it was wonderful. We went on into reentry, and of course we went into blackout. And I don't remember exactly what the time figured for blackout was, but it was fairly short. And after that time passed, I got the nod, and I said, Apollo 13, Houston, standing by. No answer. 30 seconds. Standing by, Houston, standing by. And the atmosphere in mission control during that minute when we didn't get contact changed from one of relaxation and happiness back to that very, very tense, what's going on? Have we lost him after all? And then suddenly we heard, okay, Joe, from Jack Swigert. And that was about the time the chutes came out and got visible. And that's when we really relaxed and quite soon, unplugged our microphones and went home.
That was Joe Kerwin. The capsule communicator during the re-entry and landing of the Apollo 13 mission, and relating there how they did the re-entry and a number of other things there. Just backtracking slightly, I've got some actuality here of the power-up of the command module. Remember, the command module flew most of the mission after the explosion with no power, and it got very cold. And this is the critical moment where they tried to switch it back on just using battery power, that just a little bit of battery power that was left over.
Aquarius, Houston.
Go ahead.
Okay, you're go to start powering up the command module.
Right now, we're starting now.
And I need to remind you now that we did speak with Fred last week. And if you missed that conversation, you can find it on our Space Show website. And that's at space.southernfm.com.au. That's space.southernfm.com.au. And then go to the alphabetical list and go down to Hayes, and you'll find that conversation from last week right there on our website. Also, you'll find one that we did several years ago with Fred Hayes again, Fred Hayes with the Space Show. So let's go back now to our conversation with Joe Kerwin, speaking with members of the Space Association of Australia just a week and a half ago now.
Yeah, it was very good and very reminiscent. Fred was so easy to get along with. He was so objective and capable. And of course, he's the one who got really sick during those cold, wet days flying home from around the moon. He had a kidney infection and a high fever. He didn't show it stepping outside of the command module there on the carrier, but he was not feeling good, and they hospitalized him for a few days to give him antibiotics.
And of course, Joe, you're a medical doctor as well, aren't you? So you would have been
well aware of all of that. CAPCOM was not to take care of the crew. We had a flight surgeon for that, and he had very little to go on. I don't think they even had antibiotics in the medical kit. In those days, and they didn't have any cold weather gear. They didn't have any sweaters or jackets or anything to put on to keep them warm. So it was a rough go. It was hard to sleep, and they shivered for two or three days before they got home.
One of the critical things they had to do during the approach to the Earth, coming in at almost 40,000 kilometres per hour, having jettisoned the damaged service module from the command module, they then had to close the hatch between the lunar module and the command module and jettison the lunar module. So here is how that jettison went. Again, Joe Kerwin is the capsule communicator.
Odyssey, Houston, we can give you a go if you'll put the logic on momentarily, please.
Okay, the sync logic is on.
Okay, just copy that, and you are go for fire alarm.
Real fire.
Left jettison. Okay, copy that. Farewell, Aquarius. Okay, thank you.
And that was one of the most memorable features of the mission. Farewell, Aquarius. That was the lunar module. We thank you, because the lunar module had saved their lives. Well, let's go back to our conversation with Joe, with the Space Association a week and a half ago. And just pointing out that NASA has a representative in Australia because of our involvement in space tracking and other things. And Joe Kerwin served as the NASA representative here in Australia between 1982 and 1983.
Well, thank you so much.
It's a thrill for me to join you guys, because I achieved such respect during my time in Australia. For the for you, the teams that that managed the Deep Space Network, and you know, I was sent over there as the so-called NASA liaison, but you guys didn't need a NASA liaison. All you needed was to be left alone and appreciated and given a little funding from time to time, and it all worked beautifully. So it was a privilege for me to live in Australia and to meet you and watch you work, learn a little about Deep Space Network.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real honor to have you here. And I speak for everybody. Thank you so much for everything you did. And we might have you back again because you had your own space flight a couple of years later, didn't you, with Pete Conrad, and we'll have to pick you up again.
And Paul Weitz.
And Paul Weitz.
Of course, we didn't go to deep space, but our 50th anniversary will be in 2023. And if I make it for three more years, which I intend to do, let's have a party.
You've got it locked in. You have to be there, Joe. We want you there. Okay.
Gotta be.
Eat well and live well and stay safe and isolated for a little while anyway.
I shall. Thank you very much for having me.
Please don't feel like you have to hang up. I think we're just about finished anyway, Mike.
Yes, I have. And I joined in the privilege of having Joel join us. He's got a lot of unique background. And those of you who are going to go back and watch Apollo in real time, hour after hour after hour, you'll see and hear a great deal of Joel in that.
No, I'm going to run and get a cup of coffee and then just come sit down and enjoy the show.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Enjoy that.
And that was some of the members of the Space Association, including Peter Arwood, who we'll hear later in the Space Show here tonight, talking with Joe Kirwan. Well, what happened in the end? Well, here's Joe with the final part of the mission.
Odyssey Houston, we show you on the mains. It really looks great.
Yes, it really looks great. It was fantastic. And the world, which had been on tenterhooks for 4 days, finally said, oh, they're home. Thank heavens. Well, that was our story of Apollo 13.